Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Hey, Lulu here. Whether we are romping through science, music, politics, technology, or feelings, we seek to leave you seeing the world anew. Radiolab adventures right on the edge of what we think we know, wherever you get podcasts.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC, and maybe the biggest news story of the day so far for New Yorkers is Governor Cuomo's emerging position on taxes and stimulus spending. It is different from this pledge that he made on his inauguration day not to renew a temporary tax on high-income earners.
My position is, as I have said repeatedly, it hasn't changed, no new taxes.
So that would be a new tax if it was continued.
No new tax. I understand the semantics argument, Michael, and people say, well, that's not really a new tax. I say no new taxes, period.
Again, an income tax surcharge on high-income earners is scheduled to expire at the end of this month. That had public sector unions and liberals in general very unhappy. An actual tax decrease, to continue the semantic argument, coming for the top few percent at a time of still increasing budget shortfalls in New York State. So now comes word that the governor will try a whole new approach to try and satisfy all sides, an overhaul of the state's income tax code that, as reported so far, would still lower taxes for the 200,000-plus earners, but not as much. It would lower taxes more for the middle class, and it would cap any increase in state spending at 2%. It would also reportedly include a new jobs-creating stimulus bill, plus consideration of casino gambling in New York State and more. The governor is expected to call the legislature into a special pre-Christmas session, maybe as early as this week, to consider all this and be Santa for some New Yorkers, Grinch for others. One of the surprising things about all this is that the group most active in lobbying for low taxes for the wealthy to let that surtax expire seems ready to endorse some version of higher taxes. That group is known as the Committee to Save New York. And back with us from that committee is Catherine Wild, who is also president of the New York City Partnership, which represents major businesses in New York State. She's also a member of the New York Federal Reserve Board. Hi, Catherine. Thanks a lot for coming on this.
Thank you, Brian. Nice to be with you.
What's your understanding of the governor's emerging proposal as it would affect the income tax surcharge?
Well, I have not seen a written copy of the proposal, and I think my understanding is it's still a work in progress. But conceptually, what the governor's dealing with is the fact that revenues for this year and next are coming in substantially lower than anticipated. This is partly a problem with reduced bonuses on Wall Street, and it's partly a problem with the slow pace of economic recovery. So there is a budget gap that is projected and growing in the state budget again this year, which is of some concern. And the question is, where do the revenues come from to sustain that, to fill that gap? The governor has made clear that he does not support extension of the so-called millionaire's tax, which is to expire December 31st, but that the $4 billion-plus in revenues that are generated by that tax is a hit that the state cannot absorb easily. So what we're looking at and what we're waiting for is to hear precisely what is his proposal.
And you were quoted in the New York Times today saying your group would endorse a balanced approach to closing the budget gap, that is, cuts in spending and generating more revenue. But this is a change for you, right? Because isn't a balanced approach exactly what the liberal Democrats call for? A lot of spending, but also a tax increase on those most able to pay. And your group, the Committee to Save New York, has opposed what the libs call that balanced approach?
Well, just to be clear, I'm speaking now on behalf of the Partnership for New York City only, not the New York Fed, not the Committee to Save New York, because so the Partnership for New York City is, in fact,
which represents major businesses, including Wall Street firms.
That is correct. The Partnership for New York City is, as it its name implies, very concerned about the economic health of New York City in the first instance. About 80% of the proceeds of the current tax surcharge, the so-called millionaire's tax, come from or are generated by people who live and work in New York City and our metropolitan suburbs. So we're paying most of the tax out of New York City. Last year, we did not get, we had disproportionate cuts to New York City in terms of state aid. So one area of concern is that continued investment in the things that make New York City a great place to live, work, and do business not be sacrificed. So just to be clear, we have a special interest in the health of New York City and its economy, and we balance that against our concern about New York State remaining the highest tax state in the nation, and New York City in particular bearing most of that tax burden.
But why is that balance changing for you now? Because I want to play a clip of you on this show back in January when you were here representing the Committee to Save New York on what you thought would happen if the income tax surcharge were allowed to continue.
You're going to see an acceleration of the people who are leaving New York. After all, we've got more people leaving New York State than any other state in the country, and that is largely attributable to our property tax and income tax burdens.
So something's changing for you, and it's the new shortfall in the budget?
The shortfall in revenues is certainly an issue, but what's basically different is that we're not talking about an extension of the millionaire's tax, which, as I said, is disproportionately paid by the people of New York City and falls on about 4% of the taxpayers. It's a very small number of people paying this $4 billion in revenues. So what we're concerned about is how divisive and narrowly those revenues, how divisive the whole concept of the 99% against the 1% who tend to be carrying a large proportion of the tax burden. What the governor is proposing, I believe, and the caveat is we haven't seen a formal complete proposal yet, mm-hmm. is not to go with the simple, facile extension of this tax on high earners, which we think is divisive and not productive. He is proposing, let's relook at our overall spending and tax program and see what we can do together to even things out. And my understanding is there's both going to be a short-term proposal to deal with immediate revenue shortfalls, but also a proposal to put forward a tax commission or a process by which over the next year or two we will come out with some more balanced approach. And I think this is not unlike something that the New York business community has largely supported in Washington, which is a Simpson-Bowles approach to recognizing that we have to do something to reduce our obligations, long-term and short-term spending obligations. And if we take that measure, then we can accept revenue increases coming out of whether it's reducing tax loopholes or temporarily raising rates. There has to be a transition to longer-term fiscal responsibility, and people who are practical and not ideologic can accept that. For the most part, the New York business community is neither Tea Party nor Working Family Party, where generally tend to be down the middle in terms of looking for a balanced solution that ultimately raises revenues by growing our economy, but that takes time. We understand that, and in the interim, New York State and city have bills to pay.
How much of this is about image for the people you represent? Because you were quoted in the Times saying your support is a matter of language, that you don't like the term millionaire's tax because it demonizes high-earning New Yorkers, but a change in the tax code, which is Cuomo's language, does not. So is it really about hurting the feelings of people who make literally $1 million a year?
Not at all about hurting the feelings. It is about changing the attitude of New York State to make it more business-friendly, more job-friendly to attract wealth rather than drive it away. And the rhetoric of the millionaire's tax is negative, divisive, sends the wrong message. We want as many millionaires as we can get in New York State. And the proverbial wisdom is you don't tax things that you want to grow and that you want to attract. So there's a real need to change the rhetoric and to think more constructively about how we deal with our state tax code in a fair and balanced way.
At the same time, we've had so much rising inequality. And so is this a political victory for Occupy Wall Street? Because without that movement putting the public spotlight on inequality the way it did, Governor Cuomo may not have had to back down from his original position of letting the surcharge simply expire.
I think the pressure is coming not from the Occupy Wall Street movement nearly as much as it is coming from the problem of sustaining quality services, infrastructure investment in New York City and state during a period of time when revenues are simply not coming back, when tax revenues are down. Last year, as you know, the governor had a number of victories in terms of reducing state spending by 2.5% for the first time in decades. In terms of this summer, the public service unions of the state agreed to three-year salary freezes. So a lot of the low-hanging fruit, the excess spending that New York has suffered from over the years, a lot of that has been cut back. There were major reform in Medicaid. There was a cap on education spending. And the question is, at what point do you get to a point where you've got real damage because you don't have the time to work through these reforms? A good example is in the Medicaid area. In order to fix our health care system so it costs less, is more efficient, is more focused on preventive care than emergency room visits, everybody sort of knows the solution, but it requires investment and it's going to take a couple years to happen. In that process, are we going to do some things like achieve some medical malpractice reform to get costs down, to achieve some other reforms in terms of transitioning institutions away from reliance on emergency rooms to outpatient care? There's lots of things that we know we need to do. The governor has put in place work groups from industry, labor, the community that are working on that process. We saw a good start last year. We've got to see more happen. We have to see pension reform in public employee pensions. That is going to take time because that's a time bomb that's out there in terms of a cost. We'll never get our taxes down as long as that's there. So there's a huge, complex agenda, and everybody has to be at the table. And whether it's business or labor or other interest groups, our long-term interest has to be what's good for New York City and state, and we think that the governor has been honest about trying to pursue that path, about not taking easy solutions like just extending the millionaire's tax, and that's what we're hoping is a process that we're beginning for this second year of a Cuomo effort to get control of the state fiscal situation.
Catherine Weil from the Partnership for New York City. We're almost out of time on Governor Cuomo's emerging tax overhaul plan, which we expect to hear more about very shortly from the governor's office. But two things very briefly before you go. One is also on taxes. I heard a version that included a repeal of the recently enacted payroll tax in the MTA region to help fund the mass transit system, which is also facing serious deficits. Is that in there or something that you and the business community are lobbying for?
The partnership supported the payroll tax as a way to pay for the capital program of the MTA. And as far as we know, that is not part of the plan. In fact, the proposals I've heard were that would really be DOA with the business community have been to reduce the tax on outlying areas of the region, and to increase it on New York City, which would be totally unacceptable, right, since the MTA transportation system generates the $1.4 trillion economy of the entire region. So,
and last thing, so I understand you're continuing to support a region region-wide payroll tax to support the MTA and its deficits when it's trying to build. And the last thing is really a political question. A stimulus plan, the governor says, will be part of this at the same time as a 2% cap on increasing state spending in any given year. Is that possible? Is that a have-your-cake-and-eat-it rhetorical proposal? Because if they cap state spending at 2% growth, which is less than inflation, then real spending goes down. So how can you label it a stimulus?
Because the incentives associated with the comprehensive tax reform can, in fact, be significant. If you look, for example, at the film tax credit that we've enacted, we actually generate revenues from that tax credit. So you can, in fact, incentivize private investment that creates new jobs. Those jobs pay taxes, and in the end, you very quickly see that the state realizes new revenues from having a pro-business, pro-jobs program. Right. That's the hope of this tax reform, not a mindless tax on high earners, but rather a careful calculation of how we invest in economic growth.
Catherine Wild, thank you very much. And we'll hear what the governor says, when the governor says it. We don't know exactly when that's going to be, but there could be a special session of the legislature on a major tax overhaul for New York State as early as this week. Brian Lehrer on WNYC. And coming up next is the main branch of the New York Public Library about to become too digital. The Nation magazine walks between the lines to ask.